What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
The Volume.
Hi, I'm Sloan, and I know basketball. Today's guest is not only an NBA champion, but some may argue he started the athlete podcast movement. His journey from UCLA to playing in the NBA to being a dad is a story you won't want to miss. Today's guest on Sloan Knows is Matt Barnes. Okay, Matt, so I'm 16 years old, and I know it may be a long time ago for you to think about this, but what were you like at 16? Who were you like? What were you like as a person?
I think before I tell you how I was at 16, I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
The fact that you are 16 and you're doing what you're doing. I know you signed over with Draymond and Colin Wright, and just really happy for you. I love it. I think I was telling my fiance I was coming over to do it and kind of explaining what she's on. She's like, that's so dope. She's going to open the door for all these young women to start. So kudos to you.
Thank you so much.
16-year-old Matt Barnes. Can I cuss on here?
Of course. I mean, my dad may not like it, but it's okay.
16-year-old Matt Barnes. I was playing football, baseball, basketball, track in high school. Kind of finding myself. Top athlete. Yeah, I guess I kind of in the cool crowd, if you want to say it. Went to a predominantly white high school. It was about 98% white. So, you know, me and my sister were half and one of our cousins was full. So probably about 10 black kids in the whole school. But it's what I knew. That's where I grew up, you know, Sacramento, California. So 16-year-old me was just really honed in on playing whatever sport the season was. When I was growing up, like, you didn't train. Like, you played pickup ball or whatever it may be, but no one really trained. Now, like, now kids are training from, you know, young ages, but it was just kind of an all-around athlete. Loved hanging out with my friends and just kind of living, like, carefree.
And I watched a video where you said that you were a football player first.
Yes.
When did that change in your mind? Like, actually, no, I want to go to the NBA.
I just always knew I wanted to play both. I think football is my better sport. I was All-American in football and basketball my senior year, but football just came natural. I came from a family of football players, but just kept getting taller for some reason. Like, my dad's 5'10", and my mom was 5'6", 5'7", maybe, so my height kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I used to play tackle football in the streets, as crazy as that sounds, growing up, and then got to high school, was playing everything, and just really excelled in both of those. But then when I was thinking about colleges, I got recruited to go play football and basketball, but I was just thinking longevity. There was no one really 6'8 at the time that was playing football. And I just thought I'd have a lot longer career in playing basketball. But basketball, I really had to work at.
Yeah. And on the topic of college, how did you pick UCLA? Being from Sacramento, like, that's sort of a crazy thing to do.
You know, it was just, I fell in love with UCLA. I think I went there at my freshman year. I remember I was playing a little AAU tournament. We went to LA and we visited UCLA. And we walked the campus and I saw the palm trees and the pretty girls. And then we went to Venice Beach. And I saw the beach and I'm just like, such a big change from Sacramento. Sacramento's small farm town predominantly, just a lot of nature, green rivers, all that kind of stuff. So coming out here was just really dope. And it's obviously Hollywood. So oddly enough, I got recruited everywhere. I didn't take any trips. I committed to UCLA when I was 16 and didn't come for my visit until like 3 months before I graduated high school, because I was always in season. Mm-hmm. So I never really got a chance to come down and kind of take my trip. But yeah, kind of like committed without really taking or having a tour of the campus. I just knew I wanted to go to UCLA.
So Matt has two twin sons, Isaiah and Carter.
Yeah.
And they're 15 or 16?
Just turned 15.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what differences have you seen from when you played AAU and then the AAU game now that your boy's playing?
The game now, I say there's all these very watered down. I think back when I was growing up, AAU was for the best kids. And if you weren't one of those top tier kids, you would just kind of play in your local rec league. Now it's, if you know, one kid doesn't like what's going on, his dad can build a new team, or there's always new teams popping up. And there's like tiers. Now it's like bronze, platinum, gold, silver. There's so many different levels. So to me, it's just more about making money now for these coaches and, the people that turn on the events and actual having a lot of talent. So even with that said, I mean, I still love it. I enjoy coaching my boys in it and, you know, seeing them kind of play against all the other competition around the country.
Yeah. And I feel like in AAU now, there's so much NBA player involvement. So many NBA players have their own teams, etc. When was your first interaction or when did you like create your first relationship with an NBA player?
Oh, man. My first ever NBA player I met was Juwan Howard. I went to a Kings game when I was like 15 in Sacramento. And there were a ton of people, you know, trying to get his autograph. And I was a big old 15-year-old goofy kid. And he, you know, he made his way over to me and shook my hand and signed my thing. And I'll always remember that. So that was my first interaction. But I'd say make friends first. NBA guy was probably Chris Webber. Mm. Again, this is back.
All the Michigan guys.
Yeah, this is back early 2000s when the Kings and the Warriors, or Kings and Lakers are going at it. Mm-hmm. Kobe and Shaq versus C-Webb and Mike Bibby and those guys. So I was from Sac, loved the Lakers originally, but then the Kings grew on me. Webb was kind of my big homie. I go home and work out with in the summertime. So he was probably like the first NBA guy that kind of put his arm around me. I still to this day call him like my big brother. I love that guy to death.
Okay. So we were just talking about the Kings and how they're your hometown team, but you played mm-hmm. for 9 different teams. Mm-hmm. You won a chip with the Warriors. You're a part of Lob City in LA mm-hmm. and you played obviously for your hometown team of Sacramento. Mm-hmm. Which organization do you feel the most connected to and why?
I would probably say Golden State and the Clippers.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, my first stint with Golden State, the first time around, the We Believe team, we made NBA history. We knocked out the first number mm-hmm. one seed in the 7-game series, Dirk Nowitzki. I think they're like won 65 games. He was MVP and we knocked him out in the first round. So that was really historic. And even when I went back in 17, I got a chance to play with KD, Steph, Dre, Clay, the reporters, even the players, like everyone like, what was that Lob City team like? Like, mm-hmm. it's like kind of like urban legend out there at this point. So that was a dope team. And then I really took a lot of pride in playing in that Lob City team because mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, we won the first Pacific Division championship ever for the Clippers. We kind of put them back on the map. At that time, we were kicking the Lakers, but like beat the Lakers by the most points in the series, in the rivalry's history. And really felt like we had a chance to win a championship with that team, but we just had too many egos. Our stars didn't get along, mm-hmm. and I feel like it was a really wasted opportunity.
Would you say now that you're done playing, you're a fan of a team or not?
I'm fans of players, and then, yeah, I still hold a special place in my heart. You know, I was working for the Kings for a while, so I really, you know, enjoy them and De'Aaron Fox. Really all the California teams, I think it's easy to say. Okay. I cheer for all the California teams mm-hmm. and then, you know, particular players, like these young players I like.
You think the Clippers win the chip?
I feel like, I said at the beginning of the season, if they can stay healthy, this is before James came and bought in. So if I feel like they're one of the deepest teams in the league along with Boston. So I picked the Clippers at the very beginning of the season to win it.
Okay. What was your I made it moment?
Man, that's a good question, Sloan. I think I made a moment wasn't for a while. Like, I bounced around on maybe 4 teams my first 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really get a ton of opportunity to play. I'd probably say my made a moment was that We Believe season 2007. I don't even think you were born yet. What year were you born?
2007.
Holy cow. So that 2007, I feel like was really the first time I got an opportunity to play. And we made the playoffs. And I really made a name for myself. I got my first little payday after that season. So that was when I said, so you bet. Yeah, I think I got drafted in, you know, 02, didn't make it, played in the G League for a little bit. So my first full season was 03, 04. So, you know, I felt like I was really almost on my way out. And, you know, luckily that Golden State thing worked and, you know, the rest was kind of history.
Yeah. What advice do you have for guys like in the G League right now that may want to give up? Or like I saw somewhere that you were saying that if the Warriors hadn't signed you, you were just going to go try out for the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, what do you say to people that maybe are feeling that way?
I would tell anyone who's in this journey, in this grind, first and foremost, you got to be in love with this. You know, you can't mm-hmm. love it. You know, you got to be in love with it because there's beauty in the journey and the grind. And sometimes that grind is tough and that journey is ugly. But I feel like at the same time, I think what I would tell them is understanding what their game is and what they're looking for. I think where a lot of people make mistakes on all levels is everyone wants to score a lot of points because obviously that's the most talked about and decorated. But I remember Doc Rivers told me, you know, be a star in your role. And I feel like I already knew kind of what I was and where I was. Yeah, during my career, would I have liked to score more points? Absolutely. But it just, I played on teams with Kobe and Chris Paul and Steph. And like, my role wasn't to score a bunch of points. Yeah. My role was to play defense, be tough, rebound, do the dirty work. So I feel like a lot of times kids and even guys in the G League feel like, oh man, I need to drop 30 so I can get called up. And it's not that. Because most of the times when you're getting called up from the G League, you're coming to fill a role player's role. Mm-hmm. So they got their star players or whoever it is. So you're coming in to play tough defense. You're coming in to rebound. You're coming in to be some kind of glue part. You know, and that's what I'm saying. You have to really understand who your game is and what how it fits in each situation. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I would say, you know, focus on being more all around and understanding there's little things you can do to make a jump to a big team. Because, again, they're not necessarily looking for the leading scorer of the G League because if that guy was that good, he would already be in the NBA. They're looking for kind of role players. And that's not to say, like, sometimes G League, you do find a Chris Middleton who is an all-star who can score. But most of the time, guys coming up from the G League are going to be role players.
Yeah. And sort of on that topic of being patient and knowing what position maybe is right for you. I know you played all 4 years in college, which is obviously not a traditional path
old school
for an NBA player. Mm-hmm. On the topic, I guess, of advice, what advice would you give to guys in their fourth year? Like, do you think they can make it?
It's different now because back when I was playing 4 years, that was the norm.
Yeah. Like, rarely college basketball guys, obviously changed so much.
Yeah, rarely were they. I mean, there was the high school guys, and then they kind of outlawed the guys going straight from high school. And then you would stay three, four. Some guys would leave after two, but most of the time you're staying three or four. So it was a normal to get drafted as a senior when I was coming out of the NBA in the early 2000s. Now it's kind of looked down upon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're not in the league by your first or second year out of college, they're like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's tough. Obviously, the game has changed. So, I mean, that's why you got to put the work in, man. Because, like I said, if you are a senior or even a fifth year, sometimes it works in rare, like Jaime Jaquez, UCLA Bruin, who went Grayson all 4 years.
Was he all fourth?
Yeah, I think I think he went four.
Yeah.
There's a handful of guys that went 4 years now. And I think what's crazy, coaches love that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think organizations want young potential.
Yeah.
But coaches love guys that had 4 years. I mean, even Spoelstra said, I love that he came in ready. He played 4 years in college and he knew what to expect. You know, I mean, he's not bothered by this. But, you know, the NBA now drafts off potential, like 18, 19, 20. Yeah, like, you got to be there. Most of the time, it's young guys.
I remember when the Warriors drafted James Wiseman second, he was 19. And because of COVID, he'd like only played two college games, I think. And I kept just thinking, like, why doesn't he just play another year in college? Yeah. Like, Memphis had things going for them. Like, he needed to just wait, and then look where that got him without waiting.
You know?
Like, no hate, but, like, I feel like things could have been different if he would have taken just been patient.
Well, you got to think. I mean, it's such a business, but, you know, every year there's only 60 spots.
Yeah.
But over 250, 300 kids enter the draft every year. So there's a lot of people getting bad advice or bad, like, thinking they're better than they are, or their team's telling them the wrong stuff. So it's such a crapshoot now to even get in the league. It's always been tough, but I feel like now it's even harder because the game has grown more and they're taking more foreign players. But it's you got a better chance of getting struck by lightning than me in draft in the NBA.
Yeah, so it's crazy. With your sons, what was your favorite moment from their freshman season at Crespi?
I think just getting their feet wet, you know, getting punched in the face and not being afraid of the moment. You know, I'm really proud of them, to be honest with you, you know, to be able to step up and play varsity as freshmen and be impactful. And the one thing I told them going into this season is similar to what I've been preaching. Like, as a freshman, you're going to be a role player. You know, that's Joe's team. That's Peyton's team. Your job is to go in there and help them and make it easier. You know, it'll be your show come junior year. You know what I mean? But right now, these first 2 years is, you know, you got to do the dirty work and make your teammates fall in love with you. Do hustle, take charges, dive. Be energetic, have good energy around the team, and just be, you know, just be dope dudes. And I feel like, you know, to be honest with you, I feel like that's what they did. And like I said, they played well in big moments, hit shots in big moments, you know, both started periodically throughout the season. So my whole thing with the Twins has kind of been like a building process, like brick by brick. You know, I feel like I've been coaching this since they were 8 years old, and there's a lot of kids that flame out, you know, the best 11-year-old, 12-year-old, that was never our plan. And I'm glad, like, they just started working out maybe at 13, but I wanted just like, hey, we're going to peak at like 16, 17, 18 when it's time to go to college. I'm not worried about you being the best 10, 11-year-old, 12-year-old. so on and so forth. We just want to continue to get better. So I feel like we're doing, you know, a step by step of, you know, making sure we know the game, you know, think the game, not just play the game, and continuing to just steadily get better.
Yeah. And what advice to them do you have? Because obviously your path in high school was way different than theirs. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up with a dad who was in the NBA, that obviously you have to carry a lot on your shoulders. And I know I went to a Crespi game, and you watch how the crowd reacts to your kids as opposed to other kids. And, like, obviously they have the Barnes last name. What advice do you have to them in that area of, like, staying calm and being grounded?
Well, the one thing I'm huge on is the mental approach of the game. Okay. I feel like it's 90% of the game, and being mentally strong and your mental fortitude is, to me, the most important thing about an athlete, not just my sons or basketball players, because, you know, for every reason you just said, my kids are going to get either extra love because they're my sons or extra hate because they're my sons. But, you know, you got to stay even keeled. You know, I feel like sometimes the refs single them out. Obviously, the fans will go crazy and boo them, but, you know, they've been playing big games. And for, like, once I started coaching, like, we started going on a national schedule, like, 9, 10 years old. So they've been playing in front of crowds that, like, parents that, like, boo me or don't like me. So they don't like the team. So they've been playing in hostile environments for a while. So that's the one thing I'll say, like, the boys are pretty mentally tough, you know, for their age.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to what we call, like, we don't really have a good name for it. So if you would like to help come up with it, please do. But it's our positive section. A lot of what Draymond and I talked about, and sort of where our partnership comes from, is me bringing, like, a fresh new perspective. Yeah. And so much of basketball media is negative, talking about what people did wrong. But I sort of want to talk about what people did right. Mm-hmm. So for this next segment, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about specific people. So you played with some of the best players of all time. Who is your starting five of your former teammates?
Oh, man, that's a tough call. Okay, point guard. Man, my point guards, I played with Steve Nash, Chris Paul, Baron Davis. I played with Steph, but I don't really count Steph Curry because I only played with him for half a season. So I'll just keep Steph out because obviously he's incredible. Out of those people I just named, I would go with Chris Paul as my starting point guard. My starting two guard would be Kobe. My starting three would be Peja Stojakovic. My four, damn, it's tough. Either Chris Webber or Blake Griffin at my power forward. I'll let the fans decide that. And then my center is going to be Shaq.
Do you also not count KD?
I only play with those guys for a time. And I play for KD. It's the crazy part is, my final season, whatever it'll be in my final season, I signed a 3-year deal that year. My original talk was to go to state. Like, so the whole summer I knew KD and Dre were talking, and KD were talking, and I were talking about, you know, if I'm going to go to Golden State, you should try to come. So we were talking to doing that, and it kind of fell through. So I ended up going to Sacramento. But that year, so I signed a 3-year deal to kind of retire my hometown. That year, they end up trading DeMarcus Cousins at the trade deadline. Yeah. So I'm just like, talk to management, like, I'm too old to try to rebuild. So we worked out a situation where I get all my money still, and I was free to go somewhere else. And right when that happened, KD ends up spraining his knee in a game versus the Wizards. And like maybe 3 days after I left Sacramento, I was signed by Golden State. So, and then the first game KD came back. First game KD comes back, he comes back maybe 2 weeks before the playoffs, I sprained my ankle. So KD and I played together for like 10 minutes.
But like you got all your money and a ring. So yeah. I feel like it was like,
no, it worked out. It definitely worked out. The only thing that's kind of crappy about that is that, you know, I grinded my whole career to win. And finally, when I have a great chance to, I get hurt going into the playoffs and I'm not healthy in the playoffs to actually contribute. So that kind of hurt. But it was kind of a perfect storm of winning a ring. Businesses were going well. And then I kind of really missed being a dad. You know, I wasn't getting a chance to see the twins as much. So I felt like it was a good time to, you know, see what was next.
Is there someone currently not in the league, but who's still hooping maybe overseas or in the G League that you think deserves another chance in the NBA?
Absolutely. Someone that was on my show this morning, my brother, DeMarcus Cousins. I feel like he can definitely still help a team. And I also feel like Dwight Howard can still help a team. Oh, I forgot about
DeMarcus. Slow Nose alum, Dwight Howard.
Dwight? I forgot about Dwight. So I played with older Shaq and prime Dwight. So I'm going to go ahead and switch this. I didn't get to play with Laker Dwight. Shaq. I got to play with Phoenix Sun Shaq, and he was still awesome and cool. I'm going to switch. My center is going to be Dwight. I played with prime Dwight Howard. People don't know how good prime Dwight Howard was. He was absolutely
crazy that he was snubbed. Top 75.
Oh, unbelievable. Insane. Him and Vince Carter were definitely robbed.
Mm-hmm. And Clay.
I forgot I played with Vince Carter too.
Yeah.
And I played with
I played
with Allen Iverson too.
I feel like you're maybe getting old.
I am.
Ugh, it's not good.
Dang, I forgot about AI too.
Oh. Do you want to change the team?
You're keeping it.
Okay. So you have a lot of tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
What is your most meaningful tattoo and why?
Man, well, on my stomach, there's a portrait of my mom who I lost to cancer in 2007. But I got this tattoo on my leg recently of the twins and their youngest brother, Ashton. So I got this last summer. So this is probably my favorite. Obviously, I got the Kobe Gigi down here, the all-star pitcher where he's hugging her and giving her a kiss. So the Kobe one, the twins, and my little man Ash, and then my mom on my stomach. Mm-hmm.
Okay. On the topic of Kobe, I feel like because of the classic flinching situation, people don't know that you and Kobe were so close.
Very good friends.
Can you talk a little bit about your and Kobe's relationship, and then maybe tell us a story that you've never told out about him?
So I got a chance to meet Kobe. I came to UCLA in 1998. He was drafted to the Lakers in 96. And, you know, it's kind of well documented. He didn't really fit in with the older guys. He was fresh out of high school. So he was on UCLA campus all the time. So you see Kobe walking around, eating where we eat, like chilling, sitting down on campus, working out. He used to come in after UCLA practices and work out in Poly Pavilion. So I got a chance to kind of meet him and then play against him in the men's gym. So I definitely wouldn't say there was a friendship there, just, you know, meeting, passing, and then, you know, got a chance to kind of play with him during the summer. You know, fast forward me making the NBA, Kobe's Kobe by that time. And it was just always just really a challenge I look forward to. I was one of those rare, because I think I was a football player. Like, I look forward to like physically locking up on defense with the best players. And I always had to guard the best players. So it went from just respecting him being really well, and then, you know, him and I going against each other. And then it culminated in 2010 with the ball fake. And then after that situation, you know, we lose in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Celtics. They end up beating the Celtics in the finals. Wanted to stay with the Magic. It didn't end up working out. So I get hit up by Pat Riley. And this is the summer that Bron and Bosch end up going and forming the Heatles. But I'm talking to Pat back and forth. I'm like, shoot, I'm just going to go up the freeway to South Beach. This is dope. End up talking to D Wade, and Pat's telling me, like, you know, the closing lineup would be D Wade, Mike Miller, you, LeBron, and Chris Bosh. I'm just like, damn, that sounds crazy.
You can't turn that down.
Sounds crazy. So I'm thinking I'm just going to go right up to, I was just going to stay in Florida all summer. And then I get a random phone call from a number I don't know. And I normally don't pick up the phone, and I happen to pick up the phone, and it's Kobe. But I don't believe it at first. He's like, oh, what up, MB? I'm like, who's this? He's like, Kobe. I'm like, yeah, right. Like, who is this? He's like, no, it's Kobe. I'm like, oh, what up? And he's, you know, we kind of start talking about it, congratulating about them winning the finals. And, you know, he said, anyone, we start talking, he's like, you know, so what are you going to do next season? I was just like, oh, I'm not, you know, talking to Miami. I'm not sure what's up. He's like, anyone crazy enough to fuck with me, excuse my language, is crazy enough to play with me. Do you want to be a Laker? I'm like, what? Like, who is this? And I'm like, hell yeah. And like, promise you, like 4 days later, I was in LA and I signed to become a Laker. So we went from competitors to nearly fighting, you know, and then as soon as that happened that summer, He's recruited me to the Lakers. I'm a Laker. I get to move back to Cali. And we went from kind of competitors to teammates to brothers. But one cool thing about Kobe was right off the rip, he loved the Twins. So the Twins were maybe 3 years old when we came to LA. Three years old. And I used to bring them everywhere. So they would come in the locker room, and right from the rip, Kobe was giving them shoes and Uncle Kobe, and they would climb on them and wrestle them, and he'd give them jerseys. And he would, like, from like very early, like there's a picture I posted when he's holding them, and they're maybe three, like holding both of them. Like, he's always been Uncle Kobe. So that's like from there, like we really started becoming closer because just the way he accepted my sons and always looked out for them. So, you know, fast forward, we played together for a few years. He's retired. So he's, at the time, he lives out in Orange County. He's coaching Gigi. I retire a year after him, and I'm coaching the Twins when the Twins are about 8 years old. I think Gigi's 10 or 11 at this point. But what would be crazy was we would, you know, always see each other, you know, twice a month down at the facilities out in OC. But we started, once we realized we were both going to be there, we'd go, hey, what time does G play? What time the Twins play? So, like, cope sometimes. Like, I remember one particular time that the Twins played at 9. I think even after basketball, we became closer because I got a chance to, you know, I always say I'm really proud I got a chance to not, you know, obviously play with it against the Mamba and that mentality, but I got to see the man, the person, the father, the businessman, like the other side of him that he didn't really let too many people in to see. And just super cool, great dude. And, you know, obviously we all miss them.
We were talking about you and Kobe would eat in the same places. Where'd you eat in Westwood? Like, what's your place?
There used to be a place in Westwood that I love called Saks, and it's not there no more, mm-hmm. but it used to be like these fried little chicken things and rice. It was kind of like the stir fried rice you can get at like a Japanese Chinese restaurant, but it was just soup. It was just way more. I'm not doing it justice by that. And then a place called Fat Sal's.
Yeah, Fat Sal's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I actually tried to go. It's a funny story. I went there like 6 to 8 months ago and just wanted to walk around Westwood. It was like 2 a.m. and I went and I got a Fat Sal's thing, and one of the things that had cheese sticks, I was on the toilet the next day, like, excuse me, but too much information. But I'm just like, I thought to myself, like, yeah, I can't do this like I used to do when I was 18. I'm in my 40s now. My body is not the same. Yeah, that thing tore me up. Maybe TMI, forgive me, but it just shows, like, hey, back when you're young, you got a stomach like a billy goat. When you get my age, boy, you got to be careful.
Have you ever been to Hibachi Poppy in Westwood?
What's that?
Okay, it's like Benihana, but it's like just takeout. It's so fire. Like, I would, it's probably will do the same thing you
buy. What's it called?
Still try it. Hibachi Poppy.
Oh, yeah, I'm always down for a good challenge.
Yeah, okay, go to Hibachi Poppy. Because, like, think poppies. About, I love Benihana, but, like, sometimes going there is, like, too much, but you can just, like, get it to go. Uh-huh. Such a good, like, late night.
Hibachi Pie, and it's open late?
Yeah.
Killer. I'm on it.
Okay. What was your, like, cheat meal? Like, after a game you just played well, what do you eat?
Once I was in the NBA, probably be like Wingstop. I'll be honest, I was one of those guys, and it sounds crazy because when I was playing, like, diet wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, eating healthy and doing healthy stuff. Like, you got to think, I played in the early, like, I played, you know, my rookie year was almost 22, 23 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it was way different. So I was one of those guys that kind of ate whatever I wanted and it just worked out really hard, and we get a six pack and everything before every season. But I was never really a healthy eater, to be honest with you. So I kind of treated myself. Like, I enjoy food. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I wasn't, there would be times maybe when, like, towards like my last, or maybe like my 12th, 13th, 14th year, I would start having a chef and kind of eating healthy because I was getting older. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I kind of ate what I wanted.
Dwight Howard told me that during his time with the Magic, he would have 25 candy bars a day. Do you believe that?
Some of these dudes are nuts. Yeah, Dwight is different. You know, also, what was it? DK Metcalf says he eats nothing but candy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some of these guys are just like
insane
freak athletes.
Mm-hmm. In your 14 years in the NBA, you obviously went to every single arena multiple times, mm-hmm. and probably like new ones, old ones, etc. Mm-hmm. Do you ever eat the food there? Like, do you know which arena has the best food?
I don't. I wish I did. That's a great, because it's funny. So when I went back and started working out with the King, you got to think, like, I've never even been on like the concourse level of most of these places because I'm always in the locker room on the floor, then I'm out of there. So like when I go to Staples Center now, like I take pride in kind of seeing like what little place tastes good. Mm-hmm. Or when I'm in the Kings, when I was working for the Kings, I'd walk around at halftime, like seeing what little spot tastes good. Cause I like, I love like the food at Dodger Stadium. Mm-hmm. Like I always like trying the hot dogs or whatever, the nachos, wherever I'm at. So I can't say that I know what stadium has the best food.
Were you at All-Star?
I did go to All-Star. Okay.
In Indiana, mm-hmm. there was like these, like at the stadium, there was these like gigantic pretzels.
Were they good?
Oh my God. Like it tasted like, it was like heaven.
Salty
it was
too?
Like, it was salty, but it was like the material of like cake. So it was like cakey, you know what I mean? Like it was so, I could have eaten like 100 of those.
That sounds good. Yeah. I'm always for that.
You should go on a food tour of all the stadiums.
That'd be a good thing.
Yeah, we can go together.
Make some content. Yeah, let's do it. We definitely got to make some content. I'm down.
Who is a player in the league currently, a young guy, that you think's game is similar to what yours?
Oh, man, I don't really think there's... I think the game has changed so much. To be honest, I could tell you guys that like style of players that like I feel like are, that I kind of play like they're still like a Pat Bev or a PJ Tucker. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like I was a 3-and-D kind of a physical presence. You know, always had to guard the best player. But like I said, back when I played, there was roles for that. Now it's just like there's less defense and obviously more skill on offense. So I wouldn't really say like none. I wouldn't say none of these younger guys, like these guys are dope. You know what I mean? These guys are super talented. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I hung my hat on toughness, heart, being able to shoot threes and play defense. Mm-hmm. So.
So now we've talked, we've gotten deep. We've gone a little too far, but that's okay.
Hey,
okay.
Sorry about the bathroom.
No. It's okay.
Fat Sal's.
It's good for men to be like talk about their like.
Shout out Fat Sal.
You know what I mean? Like, shout out Fat Sal. We should get a sponsorship.
For
and
real.
You're trying Hibachi Poppy.
Trying to tell you, Hibachi Poppy for sure. I'm gonna write it down in my notes so I don't forget it.
It's a pink apron guy, Hibachi Poppy. Okay, so last session is Sloan knows your game. Okay, so but do you, Matt? I don't know.
We
shall see. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, you were drafted 46th. Yeah. Who was drafted 45th and who was drafted 47th?
Oh, no clue.
Do you want to guess?
I have no idea.
Okay, so that's a zero. So it's not a great start, Matt. I need you to...
See, Draymond is more focused on... So I remember he listed everyone that was drafted. For like, I didn't care about none of that. Okay. I'm just ready to go to work.
How many UCLA players have been selected in the NBA draft?
102.
Okay, I'll give you one more guess because you're like sort of close.
No, we just did a thing on our thing today. There have been... or How many is it?
125.
Oh, we were wrong then.
This is not like if your sons watch this.
Not off to a good start.
Not great.
Okay. Maybe like that's my dad.
Yeah, embarrassing. Okay, now let's try to revive you. Okay. What was your free throw percentage during your 4 years at UCLA?
Oh man, like 68 or 69%.
Ooh, he is confident. It's actually 50.5%.
Was it? Dang, yeah. 50.5.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. So
maybe that was my NBA. I got to like almost the 70s when I was in the league. But yeah, man. Oof. 50.
Rough.
That's like a coin flip.
Yeah, that's.
Don't send me to the line. I made it when it counts. What did Shaqie say? I used to make it when it counts. I'm going to go with that one.
You shot a career high in your 3-point percentage during your senior year at UCLA. What was it?
Oh, no. 39%. 42.
41.7, which rounded is 42. Okay, good.
We can
get 1 point for that.
Ding.
Okay. There is another famous Matt Barnes.
Baseball pitcher for the White Sox. Yeah. Ooh, Red Sox.
Okay.
Red Sox. He got traded.
Yes.
So I don't know where he's at now. But it's funny. The reason why I say it, because I'll go on Twitter sometimes and people are cussing me out for a bad inning. I'm wrong Matt Barnes. Like, you're a piece of get out of here. I'm just like, damn, what'd I do this time? And it was the Matt Barnes, the pitcher. Where's he at now?
He's in the minors, but he's part of the Washington Nationals organization.
Yeah, I used to get hell when he pitched for the Red Sox.
Yeah, he was like an all-star, I think.
Yeah, like he came out, he got a nice contract and everything. I was always in the loop. Like people thought it would occur. Congratulations on the $40 million. I'm like, wrong Matt Barnes. Thanks, though.
So now, I mean, you got half of that question.
Right.
So technically a right question is 2 points. And so the first one, so you're at like three.
I'm at like 4.5. Go ahead.
Three. It's my show, Matt.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Thank you.
Gotcha.
Okay. You played on the Magic for 1 year and you played all 81 games.
Mm.
How many points did you average?
I think in Orlando, I averaged like anywhere from like 9 to 11, somewhere in that window.
Yeah. 8.8, which is like practically not. I mean, is that really a winner's mentality for me to be like, Matt, 8.8, but you said none, but you think I can give you the points still?
It's your show, Charlotte.
You know, that is so true. So I did say that. I feel like you can get like a half.
Ding.
Half point. Okay. Next. How many touchdowns did you score your senior year of high school?
28.
Yes. Okay. Good one.
That was on a broken toe too, by the way, but go ahead.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you. Okay. Mm-hmm. You played two seasons with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. What was your career high in points scored?
I'm guessing 24.
Yes, 24.
No, but it wasn't, because I know I had like 25 against Minnesota one time, because I was 7 for 7. I didn't miss.
Oh.
I had 25 points.
Oh my God.
So, but
you just debunked Sloan up. Let's just pretend like.
So maybe that's a plus two for me, because you're wrong.
That
puts me at like 8.
Yeah. Mm-mm, 8. I don't know. I feel like that's
maybe
more like
6.
Yeah.
Maybe 6.
Okay. Let's roll with 6.
Just
I like 6.
We'll just round up.
You had one triple double in your career. 26 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. How many steals did you have that game?
Oh, man. I don't know. I know I was the oldest player ever to get their first triple-double. Steals, I'll maybe say 3.
2. Okay, close. This is a bonus. How many blocks and how many fouls?
I was tired that game. So I'm saying maybe 4 to 5 fouls.
And 5 fouls, yep.
2 blocks.
0 blocks. It's fine. The rest of your stat line was good, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you shouldn't have asked it. You were tricking me.
Yeah, I was tricking
like
you.
That.
Okay, this is the last question, Matt.
Okay, this is worth 10.
Okay, fine, whatever. This is like my teachers. This is what teachers hate the most.
Okay.
When the kids try to like be the ones controlling the grading, but it's okay. I'll let it slide. Okay, this is a two-parter.
Uh-oh.
You won your chip in game 5 against the Cavs, okay? Mm-hmm. LeBron was the leading scorer in that game. Mm-hmm. How many points did he have?
Ooh. 36, 38. Mm-hmm. More?
Yep.
Did he? He got in the 40s?
Yes, he did.
Let's go 42.
41. So close. Okay.
What did KD have? Oh, you got to know.
That was actually the next question. Who led the Warriors in points but you?
Him and KD were going.
It was KD. And how many points did KD score?
The high 30s.
Okay, but you need to give me like a real number.
It was high 30s though?
Yes.
Okay. 38.
39. Yes, 39.
No,
okay,
so that was dope.
How many points do you think you deserve from that?
At least 4.2.
4.2?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll consult.
That'll get me to a 15.
With some other people.
Thanks,
we'll
guys.
See. I feel like you still did well. Thank you, Matt. That was so much fun.
No doubt.
Thanks for listening. You can get links to my socials and see behind-the-scenes fun from Matt and I in the show notes, or just search at SloNose on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, or Snapchat. Remember, that's Sloan with an E.
The Volume.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.